Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoff, and we're talking about the iThrive plan for cancer survivors. With us, the co-developers, Carolyn Gazella and Lise Alschuler. And this is a first for Intelligent Medicine because, I didn't realize that we had the recording capacity to have two guests with clarion voices in different places on it simultaneously. So I thank you guys for suggesting it. Maybe we'll set a precedent for group phone calls here on Intelligent Medicine. According to the website, it says your path to wellness is three steps away. First, there's a self-assessment. There's a 10-minute health and lifestyle survey. Then the magic happens. You press a button and you hear all kinds of churning sounds coming out of your computer. Smoke comes out of the portals of your computer, and an algorithm creates your personalized survivorship plan. And then finally, you implement that plan gradually in a kind of a baby step fashion because it offers you, it chunks the experience of cancer survivorship with attainable goals that you can follow. So what are some of the components of the interventions you suggest? Because obviously, exercise is going to be one of them. Stress reduction, yeah, okay. Diet, I can envision. Do you talk about supplements as well?
We do not. So that was very purposeful on our part. Mm-hmm. And the reason for it is really twofold. One is that the supplements for you are going to be very different from the supplements for me.
And that makes sense.
And we just couldn't individualize it. And secondly, this really doesn't replace the one-on-one that you get when you go to see an integrative practitioner. This is really a complement to that work. So for people who really want to dive in and get some biomolecular support, then we encourage them to go see a naturopathic or an integrative practitioner, and they can continue to use the iThrive plan. Great compliment, but the supplements are not really in the purview of the plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, so you said in part one that this is science-based, that all these interventions actually have been demonstrated to improve survivorship or affect certain parameters of immunity and various markers of recovery. So where's the science behind this? Because some people might dismiss this as, okay, well, it's a feel-good club and, there's just a big placebo effect and, maybe we're not really impacting survivorship. Where's the beef, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, it's so important to us that we baked it right into the program. So a cancer center, a doctor, a user can click on a button that says science, and they can see the statement as to the scientific rationale for that action step, and they have references. We only use human clinical research, evidence-based research, so you won't find secondary sources. So we're not going to quote somebody's book, for example. Mm-hmm. We're going to go right to the journal that published that study or that mm-hmm. review or that research. And that's what we're going to feature. And one of the reasons why we wanted to do that is because we knew that we wanted to approach cancer centers, and we knew we were going to be talking to, oncologists and medical folks, and they want that rigor, and we are very proud of that rigor. So that's why we focus so heavily on it. And I don't think that the cancer centers that have already signed up before it was even built, I don't think that they would have done that if we weren't evidence-based. So mm-hmm. I think it was really smart on our part.
Well, give us an example, or it's probably voluminous research on cancer survivorship and the influences on it. What does the research say about different lifestyle practices that you incorporate in the program?
Gosh, there's so many. I don't even know where to start. But let me actually go to we have a whole slew of action steps in this category that we call environment, and I think this is somewhat unique. I was going to start with, exercise or diet, and we can certainly get to that. I think that's most people understand there's a relationship there between cancer risk reduction and optimizing health. But environment may not be something that they're as aware of. So, we now know that there are environmental chemicals which cause cancer or are linked to cancer, and it's actually, the knowledge has gotten so specific that we can link certain chemicals with certain cancers. And there's a new concept that's emerged that even small exposures, even minute exposures to a large number of chemicals have a very synergistic or additive effect, so that the effect is actually can be quite significant, which really says anybody living on the planet is going to have some of these exposures. And on the, you know, so on the one hand, people don't like to hear this because their first reaction, understandably, is, well, gosh, I got to keep breathing the air and keep driving my car to work, et cetera. So what do I do? So, you know, our whole kind of category of action steps in environment is really focuses on two things. It focuses on where we can control or exert some control in our environment. Let's come up with some strategies to do that. So we have some action steps that introduce people to air purification techniques. We have some action steps that actually even talk about the environment in a slightly different way and talk about the role of the environment in terms of the kind of colors and smells that we have in our environment and the effect that has on our health. So we have kind of a lot of things around that. And then we have the other side of the environmental equation, which is, well, if we're exposed to these things, let's at least make sure we're able to detoxify them appropriately. So we also give people some lifestyle-based detoxification support. So, you know, kind of in addition to introducing people to non-toxic cleaners and air purification, we also give them some ways to, you know, strengthen their defenses against some of these toxins. Mm-hmm. And there, as I said, this is, you know, an emerging field of data, and there definitely is clear connections there now.
And I think the most egregious example of this, and this, I didn't know this, is that, you know, sometimes people who have cancer, say, look, you know, I've got cancer already. So let me, you know, and I was so careful before, you know, I did smoke, but now it doesn't matter. I'm just going to smoke my brains out because I already got cancer. But actually some studies suggest that you hasten your demise from cancer by continuing to smoke. It's not like, well, you got cancer already, so, you know, let her fly when it comes to all these environmental hazards. It does influence your prognosis even once you've had cancer, from what I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we're one of the, you know, not, there aren't a lot of people talking about a healthy person with cancer. And to use your example, the person who was smoking and figures, oh, I might as well just keep smoking. One thing that they don't realize is that their quality of life will just be detrimental. And what we talk about is, let's do everything that we can to be healthy and vibrant, despite, you know, what's going on, despite a cancer diagnosis. And I think that that is a very empowering message. I mean, one thing that we wanted to do with iThrive is, you know, it's a serious topic and it can be a drag. I can tell you there are a lot of times I wish I was, you know, writing about puppies and horses, but, you know, what we try to do is we try to make it fun. We try to lighten it up as well. And we are very real. So like in the environmental section that Lisa's talking about, we'll say, gosh, this overwhelms us too. And we get it. So let's just take some small steps. Let's just do some things. And if you're smoking, you know, let's just try to cut back, and then let's just try to help you stop. And, you know, so I think we try to make it real as well. It's not, you know, pie in the sky. And, you know, these are, things that Lisa and I have been faced with. And, you know, she deals with it all the time with her patients. And, so yeah, we try to be very empowering with our messaging.
And some of this scientific data and the substantiation for this program is in an article that you prepared for the Naturopathic Medical Journal, correct? The NMJ.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to do that. So Carolyn and I and our medical advisor, who I just would like to call out for a moment, a key member of our team is Dr. Matt Mumber. He's a radiation oncologist. He works out of Harbin Clinic in Georgia, and he is really a wonderful individual, practices very integratively, and every piece of content that Carolyn and I write is reviewed by Dr. Mumber, so that's also part of our peer internal peer review process. And the three of us wrote an article that just came out in the November 2016 issue of the Natural Medicine Journal called Lifestyle Interventions Enhance Quality of Life and Reduce Recurrence Risk Among Cancer Survivors. We kind of take a big picture view and go through some of the literature that supports some of these big concepts and interventions. And this is an open access article, so anybody can get this by going to thenaturalmedicinejournal.com.
Great. Yeah, let's if you really want to drill down and see what the evidence says. That article summarizes all the important studies. What about the stress connection? Because, you know, there's this whole science of psychoneuroimmunology, which is such a controversial area. Sometimes it's dismissed as wishful thinking. Other times it's been shown that literally you can reboot your immune response and help your immune system hunt down and destroy cancer cells with visualization, with relaxation. Where does the evidence point on that?
Well, you know, I'm going to jump in here just to comment about our rejuvenation section, but then I'd like to have Lise comment from a more of a medical scientific standpoint. You know, our stress management part of the plan is called rejuvenation, and we call it that intentionally. You know, it's impossible sometimes for us to control the amount of stress that we're under, but we feel very strongly that we can influence our bodies during stressful times, and we can find ways to rejuvenate mind, body, and spirit during stressful times. So that's our focus. You know, we talk about, you know, something as simple as silence. You know, and work-life balance, and you know, wonderful wake-up routines. So how you start your day will set the tone with how you're able to interact with the stress as a part of that day. But Lise can speak on the more medical side of things.
Yeah, well, without getting too technical, this is an area that I am so fascinated with, and it began many years ago when I, you know, patients would say, "I feel that this particular stressful event in my life or this long period of stress is what caused my cancer." It was such a common association. And so I sort of scratched my head and thought, well, is there a link between stress and cancer? And dove into the literature and have been doing a deep dive ever since. And what's really interesting is that the literature is emerging. And clearly we can say that excessive stress will accelerate or, in other words, aggravate a tumor or an established cancer. And there does appear to be a link between chronic stress, particularly a sense of pessimism and hopelessness, with an increased risk for developing cancer. But does stress cause cancer? We can't say that definitively. But there's definitely some good data, and it makes sense because if we think about, there's kind of two main ways I would say that stress can translate into cancer. And without getting too scientific, I'll just summarize this in sort of a simple way. One is that when we're under chronic stress or high levels of stress, one of the consequences of that is immune suppression. And one of the immune cell types that is the most sensitive to stress is an immune cell called the natural killer cell. And natural killer cells are one of the most important ways that we can monitor ourselves from cancer. They're like our sentries, and they are out there constantly surveying the territory of our body to make sure there's no, you know, invading cancer cells. When we're under chronic stress, those natural killer sentry cells become sluggish. They don't work very well. So that's one way. The other thing that's, I think, perhaps even more interesting is that more recently we've discovered that many cancer cells express on their surfaces receptors for stress hormones. So in other words, they express almost like baskets that catch these stress hormones. When that basket catches the stress hormone, it turns on growth pathways in that cell. So stress literally upregulates the growth rate of cancer cells. That's probably the way in which stress is linked to an increased risk of cancer progression. So, I mean, there's some really fascinating data on this, but in my mind, I'm convinced that there's a link. So it's absolutely in everybody's best interest to address stress.
It creates a little bit of a conundrum, though, because I'm sure you're both familiar with Susan Sontag's essay on cancer. She herself, suffering from cancer, pushed back against the science, which is, I think this must have been in the 1970s, the emerging science that suggested that cancer sufferers were in some way responsible for their own cancer, which brings them greater distress. They thought, oh my goodness, how did I allow my immune system to lapse? I have a weak psychological makeup or a faulty character that has brought this terrible misfortune on me, thus putting them into a negative loop. Obviously, you're sensitive to that consideration.
Oh, absolutely. Very, very mindful of that because, I mean, as cancer survivors ourselves, I remember after my diagnosis, I stopped drinking alcohol and then I started drinking a glass of wine every now and then. And I was so afraid of that glass of wine. I was like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I'm having a glass of wine, you know, and you just kind of run yourself into a tizzy. And I think that there is danger, in, language that kind of, you know, makes us wrong for getting cancer. And that is, we are the polar opposites of that. You know, what we talk about is, you just have, tools. And, you know, sometimes some people are predisposed to cancer. Here's a good example. My family is one of the largest known, carriers of the BRCA gene. Mm-hmm. And, in North America.
This is for our listening audience, just to remind them, this is a gene that is, highly predisposes to breast cancer, but also to ovarian cancer. It's, the Angelina Jolie gene, you know, recently popularized, and she had bilateral mastectomy and prophylactic oophorectomy because she felt she was at higher risk, maybe, you know, 30-40% or more of, after having breast cancer, having ovarian cancer.
Yes, absolutely. So, in my family's case, The new studies about epigenetics, so Lisa and I, the foundation of our science is really the study of epigenetics, and the new studies showing that we can, in fact, influence how our genes behave, and we can shore up. I can shore up the other repair genes in my body. I may have the BRCA mutation, and that one isn't going to work, but I can shore up other genes in my body. So there was a study showing that BRCA-positive women who carried a normal body weight and ate more fruits and vegetables, they actually didn't have an increased risk of developing breast cancer. So that is a very empowering message, and that's really some of the messages that we try to give to our users, you know, that there are things that you can do and try not to get too stressed about the things that you can't control.
Indeed.
And if I could just add on that, because Ron, I think you're bringing up such an important point, and I'm really glad that you did. The way I talk about this to my patients is almost, it's like if you have this really interesting tasting soup, and you try to go back and figure out which ingredient in that soup is giving it its flavor, you won't be able to do it because it's really a combination of the whole thing, all the spices, the base that you use, the vegetables that are in there. And that's kind of like cancer. When you have cancer, there's so many factors that went in, some of which we're never going to discover, and some of which we might identify. Now, post-cancer, on the other side of it, we can, you know, kind of pretend like, gosh, I know there is that spice in that soup, so that must be the reason I had cancer. That's really a false argument. It's part of a picture. It may or may not have contributed a lot. Looking forward, though, we can say, well, gosh, I know that was in there, so can I do anything to minimize its impact going forward? And I think that's really what it's about. It's a very forward approach, not a blaming self-reproach kind of thing.
Indeed.
Right.
And, you know, thanks for clarifying. And you know, finally, exercise is a component here. What do the studies say about the role of exercise in bolstering the body's defenses?
Well, what we find most interesting about that category is that it is the most recent research is more on being sedentary. Sitting is considered to be the new smoking.
Yeah.
So that's really why we call that category movement and not exercise. Mm-hmm. And we're all about exercise. But what we want to do is we want to just get people moving, and we want them to move frequently throughout the day. And we will meet them wherever they're at. So there are beginner, intermediate, or advanced action steps. So the more advanced person might get an action step that tells them, you know, in addition to your workout, what are you doing throughout the day and how can you move throughout the day in addition to your workout? Whereas the beginner person maybe asked to just stand more frequently that day. So we will meet them wherever they're at. And it's one of our favorite categories. I have to tell you, Lisa and I both enjoy movement, and we really like that part of the plan because it's so impactful. We know, I forget the number of types of cancer where that the risk is reduced significantly just by movement. All of the big ones, breast, prostate, colon, just by moving throughout the day, you can reduce your risk of developing cancer significantly. It's probably one of the most powerful things that we can do.
Indeed.
And I would just add that, you know, within our iThrive plan, to Carolyn's point, it is about introducing movement, but it's, you know, we have dozens and dozens of action steps within each of these categories. So there will be specific exercise recommendations or action steps. And again, the idea is to give people inspiration to continue their efforts in that regard. And again, this is where the level is so important. So we want to meet people where they're at. And when they, if they're already exercising every day and they're getting kind of bored with their workouts, we give them some suggestions to do different kinds of exercise. So, you know, I think it's really the whole thing underneath this is to keep peppering people with little tiny steps that can either strengthen what they're doing, take it up a little notch, or add something new.
Well, that's really, really exciting. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? How can people find out more about the iThrive plan?
Well, the best way is to go to the website. The website is packed with lots of information. There are videos, testimonials, and that is iThrivePlan.com. So it's iThriveplan.com.
Great. And so obviously, this is going to come up. Is this a very expensive program to join? I mean, it costs hundreds of dollars to become a member and to access the information.
It's worth hundreds of dollars, but we're only charging.
Not to say that it isn't, but I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear
reality,
you.
Reality so principle intrudes here.
We're charging $8.99 a month, which is less than 30 cents a day. Wow. For people to access this in an unlimited way. So it's actually very reasonable. I want to add one little footnote, which we should have talked about way at the beginning, but there might be a little barrier for some of our listeners who might have another health condition or something that they feel like would prevent them from using this.
Yep.
And one of the things we've built into this are what we call filters. And this is, again, Dr. Mumber and I have really gone through this. So every action step goes through the process of part of the questionnaire is to ask people about other health conditions. Do you have congestive heart failure? Do you have atrial fibrillation? Do you have kidney disease?
Good.
And then we filter out certain steps so that really this becomes a, you know, safe and fun, engaging, effective way to improve your life for 30 cents a day.
Can't beat that. You know, I really have to congratulate you guys because, you know, if you've taken a paradigm, which I guess was sort of luxury medicine for the elite to access, and you've really democratized it and made it available in a very palatable, easy-to-use, accessible form. So great job, as usual. And we want to get the word out about the iThrive plan. Thanks for very much for joining us. And I'll see you soon on the radio. I'll join you on your radio program.
Yes, we can't wait. Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
Yes, thank you very much.
My pleasure. All the best. That's Carolyn Gazella and Dr. Lise Al Schuler. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.